Recording. All right, testing, 1, 2, 3, testing. All right. Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of People Stack Academy. My guest for this episode is Tom Guidotti, CEO at Omni Solutions. Welcome, Tom.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So let's get started. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what do you guys do at Omni? What is Omni all about? And what you do as CEO? What does your typical day look like?
Sure. So Omni Solutions is a web application development company. We focus on building, applications or pieces of software to help medium-sized and large-sized companies navigate their day-to-day. It's based on workflow processes and how to navigate kind of the day-to-day, or really kind of go ahead and simplify the day-to-day using technology.
Great. So what do you do as CEO? What's the day in the life of a CEO at Omni?
My job really is to kind of steer the ship and keep everything moving. So it's a lot of management of people. It's a lot of management of the finances. I do all the accounting, all the billing, all the legal work, all the HR. We only have 10 of us. So a lot of the day-to-day running of the business falls on my shoulders. I have three software engineers, two graphic designers, and then a junior developer, I guess, and then a couple admin people as well to help. So what we've done is actually split it off into a couple different divisions. We have a creative division, a development division, and then an admin division. I oversee all three of those, and I have three different people and then go ahead and, you know, if I see there's an issue here, I can help out or allocate resources where necessary.
Got it. And so how many total did you say? I counted around 10, 12 maybe?
There are 10 of us, including myself. So I am the CEO, I have a CTO, a CCO, and a COO, and each of them have three individuals underneath them as well.
All right, so relatively small team, and so I could see how you do some of the non-glamorous stuff, right?
Non-glamorous stuff, but you know, it's a lot of long hours. That's why I get to do my best, thinking and get creative after hours once the day-to-day kind of ends and the fires are done being put out. My C-level execs and I kind of sit around usually every Monday, and we just brainstorm how to make the company better, how to engage our employees more, how to bring more, you know, marketing. It really varies. I really, really rely on my team to help get their ideas and their input. That's very important for us.
Right. And so is everyone on site or is anyone remote?
So 8 people work out of our media. We have 2 offices. We have one in Media, Pennsylvania, and one in Allentown, Pennsylvania. In our media office, we have 8 of us there. So the majority of the team is there. Mm-hmm. 2 satellite guys in Allentown. They have their own office, and they're kind of their own entity, but they're actually a sales guy and an account manager out there. So I have a technical guy, and I have a sales guy. And it's good. It's difficult in the beginning. Because, you know, they are very far away, but we do have, you know, myself or my COO is up there at least once a week just to kind of check in on them and then help them out with whatever they need. And then we also have happy hour every once in a while. Once a month, I actually will put a funny apron on and I'll cook breakfast for the office. Always invited for that. One thing that we try to do really is just try to have fun. It's work, so we do boring stuff every once in a while, but, you know, we have a stereo that kind of I bought everyone a Spotify account and said, put whatever you want on.
Nice.
You
know. Awesome. Great. And I love the Spotify thing that's an awesome perk that you bought a Spotify account for everyone. So that way there's like, they can't complain about not having access to the music they want to listen to. Right. So I bet there's lots of folks sitting around with headphones on, listening to Spotify.
Well, actually, we have a stereo that we resurrected, actually. We found an old stereo and fixed it up, and we put it in the office. And I linked up to a – because we linked it up and converted this into And at any time, you can change a song. Really, I set it up to where you just log into Spotify on your computer, and if you book a song you like, it pops up on the stereo. Doesn't matter who computer you're on.
Got it. Got it. Okay, that's great. That's cool. That's cool. So let's talk about meetings. We've talked recently about how you've downsized your meetings at Omni, and I think that this is something that folks will find really interesting and helpful of going through the process of basically how do we build better meetings. And given that I know you guys have gone through that at Omni recently, I'd like to talk a little bit about that. So can you give, let's start with a brief overview of what your meetings sort of used to look like at Omni and what the new implementation is.
Our old meeting structure used to be what I would call tiresome. They would range between an hour to 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, long agendas, once a month, maybe every other week sometimes, but they're very long, a lot to cover, a lot happened. Some topics would be covered, but just, you know, you have to have everyone be on the same page. And so they were just long. By the end, by after the first hour or even first half hour, everybody was looking burned out and it wasn't working very well. So we switched to a new method where we do standing meetings daily. So opposed to having them one huge meeting every month or every other week or whatever it ends up being, we decided every department has a 10-minute standing meeting. And then once a week, I have about a 10 to 20 minute meeting with my my core C-level guys. And it's been a lot of relief, actually. A couple positives about it is, so I guess I should tell you the structure first. It's very specific. Everyone gets together in the team, typically. The C-level exec will run the meeting, and the other two will actually go ahead and you know, give their feedback, and it just goes, tell me how your day was, tell me if you and that went well for you. So we want to celebrate a success. We also then want to identify an issue if there was one. And then the last part of the meeting is then the person running the meeting will actually go ahead and, you know, come to a conclusion to fix it. So there'd be always an action item or two to walk away. But they're only 10 minutes. So productivity, I think I told you before, it increased, I think it was 50%. It increased dramatically doing this. People aren't taken away from their desk. I mean, there's the obvious where they just lost hours of productivity. Each person's worth X amount of dollars per hour. You take, you know, 10 people out of commission for 2 hours a day, you've just lost, for 2 hours, you lost 20 hours. So I mean, there's that gain back. And then you're able to fix issues quicker. Let's say somebody, so it was a huge benefit.
That's great. And only 10 minutes, does that mean sometimes people only get a matter of seconds to get through what they need to get through?
Yes. Since it's every day, not everybody has an issue every day. So the good thing about it being constant, and it's a constant feedback loop and constant data being given back to you about your performance for that day. Sometimes it's just, I have no issues today. Okay. No big deal. Move on to the next guy. And he might say, yeah, I had this issue, but the day prior he didn't. So not much pushback, mainly because I have an open door policy. So anything that's beyond that 10 minutes, I just tell them, talk to me offline then. Send me a message. Let's talk it through. What if you have an issue or a problem that's beyond that? You can talk to myself. You can talk to your direct supervisor. I feel like if we didn't have that and we didn't have an open, engaging culture, there could have been some issues, but yeah. I have a background in IO psychology, as you know, so I'm able to kind of navigate those things a little bit, you know, I guess preemptively, just kind of knowing what I learned from my master's program and then being in the real world for a little bit in that field.
Have you experienced times when your IO psychology training has gotten in the way?
Autonomy. So yes. First thing I did when I took this company over is I upped everybody's autonomy. Everyone was micromanaged, not too badly, but there was an element of it. So I kind of eliminated that and told everybody, I trust your judgment. You know, I'm going to give you all the autonomy in the world. You can kind of, you have the reign to make decisions however you see fit. And it was good for a little bit, but then things kind of got a little out of hand with it. So it was kind of the issue of now you have too many cooks in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to make different decisions. Everybody, and then it actually caused some conflict and some arguing when there wasn't that one person to say, no, this is what we're doing. Some people, they don't know how to react to having autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
I had one gentleman that he doesn't work with us anymore, but I would continuously catch him, you know, on social media, on just doing things that were, there has to be an element of, you know, figuring out what's going on. Cause you know, I would just let him do his thing for a couple of days. And then I would go look and go, hey, did you get X, Y, and Z done? And nothing. So yeah, that's why the meetings, actually with the daily check-ins, that daily constant feedback, those meetings serve so many purposes for us now. It's not just a means of, you know, finding their feedback, you know, to us, but it's also, it's a two-way street, which, you know, is something that I've always been a big proponent of, is a back and forth feedback loop where it's not just the employer evaluating the employee, but more along the lines of also the employee evaluating the employer. You know, how am I doing as a manager? Am I serving all your needs, you know, as an employee in this company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with the meetings, do you feel like that's helped you to get at that nice balance point between enough autonomy and enough freedom and not too much freedom?
Exactly. Well, it serves, I guess you can say it serves also as a benchmark. You know, since you're daily checking in, if somebody's veering off the path, they're not going to veer too far.
Yeah.
Because you know what's going on and you can say, okay, you can keep going that route if you like. However, here are the issues that you're going to find along the way. And if you can teach it, you can turn it into a teaching lesson as well.
Sure.
One thing that we pride ourselves a lot is that we do educate a lot. We offer absolutely free training to any of our employees after hours. So my lead developer, he stays late every Thursday. And he will actually offer a free training to anybody in the company that wants to learn about development and online development, WordPress, media, JavaScript, Ruby, you know, you name it. He kind of lets them dictate the curriculum, but.
Yeah, yeah. And so I want to take this autonomy thing to the extreme in terms of thinking about it from the perspective of say your employees or say the average, you know, the line manager, the mid-level manager, or even like an engineer, you know. So in talking to engineers and engineering managers, you know, those kind of folks, when I ask them, you know, basically, what do you want? You know, what do you want out of this life as a tech geek, as a tech, somebody in the tech world? Freedom and autonomy does come up a lot, which is why I think it's really interesting that you brought that up. And so to them, you know, they want to be like the Elon Musks of the world or the Richard Bransons of the world who have total and complete freedom. Just be like, you know what, I have this crazy ass idea. Like, I want to just go and run toward it. And I know it's risky. And so I think that, and that's what brings people, I think, to these kinds of positions. So the challenge of the upper level leaders is sort of giving that leash, but being like, you know, hey, I have a company to run here and we have our own company level goals. So I'm wondering if you've experienced that kind of sort of that pushback, like, but hey, can I go and run with this? Like, it was kind of like what you were just hinting at before. Like, hey, you can go do this, but I can't guarantee you're gonna succeed. So how do you give your folks that sort of that freedom that they yearn for, if assuming that they yearn for this and you've experienced this, without sort of sacrificing the company goals, without, you know, for example, losing so much money by taking a huge risk?
You pick your battles. They're all discussions. I will never sit here and say no to your idea blindly. So I'll just sit there and I listen. I really do. I sit down and I'll listen to what they're saying, figure out, you know, will this make sense? I will. And a lot of the times, if it's a big idea, that's a lot of risk, I'll say, I need a night. I need to think about it.
Yeah.
I'll never just shoot somebody down blindly. If I really, you know, before I say no to somebody, I always say, let me think about it. Let me ponder this. Let me do my own little research and figure out what's going on. And if I'm going to tell them, no, don't do this, I'm going to supply it with a whole host of reasons why not. So they understand.
Yeah.
It's to be transparent. And I tend to be very on the transparent side of things when I'm talking to anybody who works in the company. This is my thought process. This is why I'm doing this. This is why I believe that you should offer a lot of explanation for any decision that we make as a company. And I actually share my company goals with everybody. I let them know, mm-hmm. this is where I want to be in 5 years. This is where I want to be at the end of this year. I have no problem with letting them in on what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain employees where you're willing to give a longer leash and more freedom and more autonomy, and others, and I'm not asking you to name them, but where I'm going with this is what, so let me have you answer that question. I'm then we'll go from there. Are there certain employees who you're willing to give a longer leash to in terms of freedom and autonomy?
Yes.
And what, so what differentiates them from the people who you're not?
Yeah, there are some that I will say, yes, I trust their judgment a little more than others.
Sure. And they earn that trust. And how would you say that they've earned that trust?
Well, they come to me with an idea. They come to me with a good plan, and they show me that they thought it through. It wasn't just, hey, I woke up and I dreamt this idea and now I want to run with it and spend, you know, X amount of dollars on it. Cause a lot of the time these things cost money. You know, I have this idea I want to try, and I have to open my wallet up a little bit, so to speak. And so the ones who come to me with a lot of research and show me an ROI on it, really think of it, show that they have that business sense behind it, I'm more inclined to say, yeah, run with it. Great. And I won't ask as many questions.
Great. So let's switch topics a little bit here. I want to hear a little bit more about what you do at Omni and the kind of apps that you build for your clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Our typical client is medium-sized or larger-sized companies. We'll build a marketing WordPress site here and there. We're still on the newer side of things. So, some work we'll just still take it because it makes sense and our pipeline isn't that full. But our bread and butter really is applications that help companies simplify, as I said earlier. So some companies, they run their entire business off of the application. There's one that we're building right now that, it's a software as a service that they're actually selling to other companies. And what it is, it helps disaster recovery. And what it does is take inventory of not the items within, a location, but it's really meant for property managers and knowing, who the emergency contact person is if something happens. It's a big database. And also tells you, it houses the blueprints of the building. So then let's say something bad does happen or disaster, first responders can get there and know, here's where the gas lines are and here's where the water lines are. Let's shut the gas lines off first so that it doesn't explode or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. That's kind of one example. Another one, we're actually building an application to administer surveys. So I take a personal interest in this one, having my background be in research and doing, I did a lot of quantitative, but this is a qualitative research. So where they just take, large segments and I'm trying to not violate any NDAs as I'm talking about these. So I apologize for it being vague. But what it does is take, respondents, and present them a graph, actually, but it's all qualitative data, which is interesting how that works.
Oh, interesting. So you're not talking about percentages and averages and things like that. So this is like responses to a prompt, like an interview question. So like if we were to take the text of this interview that we're conducting right now, and it's really just text, just so that folks on the other end know what we're talking about between qualitative and quantitative.
Yeah.
And so this is a survey tool for this qualitative data, that free response kind of data. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and this is actually, admittedly, this is probably my favorite project we're working on. I think the designs on it are absolutely stunning, and the application is just, it's very cool to me, but it hits home a little bit. Because there's so many other, I see so many other uses for it. If down the line they allow us to kind of expand it, but we'll see what happens.
Cool. cool. That's exciting. So you guys do everything from disaster recovery to building qualitative surveys. So it must be really nice to be able to have similar yet different kinds of projects.
Oh yeah, it is. It is great. Well, I mean, just one thing that you know, I guess coming back to the question of using IO psychology in my day to day, it actually starts with our estimating process. I refuse to write an estimate or any kind of bid on a job that isn't fully fleshed out. So if somebody comes to me and says, I have an idea, this is what I want to do, I sit down with them and we do something where you write user stories and you go through, and actually we do consulting a little bit, and we'll sit down with them and figure out exactly what are you trying to do, what are you trying to accomplish, and I have them draw their production or, you know, process cycle up on a board, on a whiteboard, and I'll sit down and say, point to me where this piece of software is going to fit in and where you think this is going to improve. Mm-hmm. And if they can't do that, I will either walk away and not even bid on it, or I'll sit down and walk them through and show them, well, this is what you can do to actually improve a process, and here's the ROI you can expect if you do a job, you know, build a piece of software like this. That's very important to our companies, that, you know, I don't want to build something that somebody's not going to use. They're not cheap.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You're not in the business of helping them figure out what business they're in, right? Yeah. You're in the business of helping them make their business better. So if it's about optimizing, they already have to have those wheels turning pretty well in order to build that up and think through the process.
Well, sending help with it, you know, and that's one thing I do enjoy doing that. And it's something we actually typically don't charge for. Mm-hmm. Also, somebody for 2 hours, 3 hours, and just help them map it out, because I just kind of get into it. I like talking about business and what they're trying to do and trying to accomplish. And so personally, it's fun.
The last question that I want to talk about is something that I ask pretty much everyone who comes on this podcast, which is, what's the biggest people-related challenge that you face at Omni, and how are you tackling it?
Sure. Internally in our company, the people who really are most successful are ones who can handle minimum direction. I wish I could sit here and say that I have... you know, your day-to-day job outlined for you, and here's your sheet of paper, and I just need you to do these 10 tasks every single day, and then you'll be fine. It's not a punch-in, punch-out kind of job. You have to come in and really get engaged with what we're doing. Our office actually is one big open floor. Nobody has an individual office. So I sit in the same room as everybody else who works for the company. We have a big conference table in the middle of the room, and everyone kind of just has desks everywhere, and you just have to be able to kind of work in that environment. It is noisy. There's a lot of noise happening. There's a lot of commotion, which is good, and a lot of discussion. If something comes up, you know, you have to be willing to sit down, you know, and talk about it. We have that conference table in the middle, so it's to facilitate those open discussions. And we've had people in the past that just don't thrive in an environment with minimum direction. It's just, that's kind of the biggest thing, is you have to be able to thrive in an environment that lets you kind of do your own thing. And if you need direction, it's really tough, because we're all very busy. We're trying to do too much to be able to hold anybody's hand right now.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you say that, because we began our conversation with talking about autonomy. Mm-hmm. And how too much autonomy can get out of hand, it can increase conflict, but that not being able to handle some level of autonomy is a bad thing, because then they're never going to produce anything or anything good, maybe. So again, it's sort of that balancing act between, yes, go do this, don't bother me for a day, right? Is that kind of what you're saying? Versus just go do this and, you know, don't just go off for a week and not come back to me. It also sounds like you're sort of getting to the step-by-step thing. Like, I can't give you the step-by-step directions on how to do this. I want to empower you to figure out how to do this yourself.
Well, it's that balancing act. I mean, I hope that I didn't give the impression earlier that, you know, autonomy is bad. It's actually as a business owner, it's your greatest tool. You cannot build a business by yourself. Right. You have to trust the people who work for you.
Right.
That's huge. However, I mean, people can run amok. It can go a little nuts. You have to learn how to. It really is. It's a balancing act. It's a tough one. I would say that's probably the biggest challenge most business owners face.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say, especially in the tech/innovation space, where being creative is necessary for the job, and being creative means having that freedom to run off those ideas and maybe pursue them a little bit. Yeah. Well, on that note, how about we wrap up our conversation, Tom? It's been great talking with you today.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
And that wraps up another episode of the PeopleStack podcast. Check out my website, jenbunk.com. That's JenBunk.com, where you can find lots of goodies, including a link to PeopleStack Academy, my online school dedicated to helping the tech community build better people processes. Also on jenbunk.com, you can sign up for the Change Log, the PeopleStack weekly email with tips and exclusive offers only available to my email tribe. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.